Okay, it's getting far into the semester and dark in the morning, so it's probably hard to get up. But we'll start anyway. The topic today, I shifted a little bit, as I said Wednesday, shifted a little bit on the topic. So we're going to do the validation today and Monday. I would normally have done that next week, but since there won't be much lecturing next week, we'll do the validation, which is the more important of the remaining parts. So that's why here usually that will be week 44 next week, but we'll do it now. I'm gonna have a meeting with the reference group in my office after lecture, and if some of you have any feedback and you haven't talked to the reference group, I don't know if they're gonna show up. Might be an idea to grab them during the break and or talk to me directly. That works as well. XML validation. Talk a little bit first about types of documents, because some documents there is more of a need for validation than other documents, and we'll talk a little bit about validation services, and how we can make use of XML validation in PHP when we write programs that is typically using the DOM to access data. More when we parse and read than when we generate, but we can also use it when we generate to make sure that what we generate is valid for the format that we have. There are two technologies in XML for validating schemas, validating XML data. One is DTD, which has been inherited from SGML, which was the technology that led into XML. And the DTD is, as we can see today, it's a bit restricted, and it's an awkward syntax if you haven't been used to it. Then, after the break, we'll talk a little bit about XML schema, which is a more refined validation technology, where we have more accuracy in terms of specifying what is valid and what's not valid. And also, it's written in XML, so we can use any of our XML tools for dealing with the schema. And for DTD, that's not the case. But since you're going to see a lot of DTDs if you work in this area of XML, and also because DTDs are pretty simple for documents that aren't too complex, and there aren't too many specific requirements, putting together DTD is probably faster and easier than putting together a schema. So knowing both is good. What I expect for in this course is that you're more familiar with the schema. That you could, if you look at the course description, it says that you should be able to read and understand a DTD, and you should be able to put together a simple XML schema. So that's why we're going to spend more time on the schema. We're going to continue on schemas on Monday. Sorry, Tuesday. And we're going to go a bit more in depth on XML schema. But first, documents. You're going to see different types of documents. And it's not necessarily, clear cut. But you have documents that are typically data-centric. And in the database course, you're going to see more of the data-centric documents, because we have documents that represent data. We're going to put them in the database or generate a document from the database. So typically these are data-centric. In this case, we have elements that contain either other elements or just texts. So if you think about the skier logs, so you have a skier element that contains a first name, a last name, and the year of birth. These are just elements. But then, the first name is just a text. Year of birth is just a year. So we have either element containing other elements, or we have an element containing just data. As we saw when we parse, there's a bit of a mix anyway, because... Oops. I don't know where it is. We'll see. Hopefully it goes away. And text, if you remember, when we parsed an XML document, we would sometimes find some text nodes representing spaces and carriage return, but these aren't really text values. So blanks are ignored in the when we parse. So in this case, when we talk about data-centric documents, it's okay that it contains blanks, but it doesn't contain text mixed up with the elements. If you think about, and it's pretty regular structure. If you remember the skier logs, you have all the clubs, and within the clubs element, you have each club, and within the club element, you have the name of the club and the city and the county. And then you have the skiers, and then you have the seasons, and for seasons you have skiers, and for skiers you have skier, and for skier you have a log, and for log you have an entry. So it's a very fixed structure. Very regular. And the nutrition example is the same, where you have daily values and you have food elements. And the food elements, you have children for the various, the manufacturer, the name, the contents of the various food items. A narrative document would be, think of an HTML document. Think of the today's front page on any newspaper. So there are some elements like headers and tables and divs and spans and whatever. And in between there is text. So you have a little bit of text, and then you have something emphasized, and then you have a bit of text again. It's quite irregular. Some pages have chapters, some have chapters, level 1, level 2, other chapters have level 4, some chapters don't have sub-levels at all. So it's quite irregular, and you have various types of documents that represent this. Now, you have something in between documents. RSS, do you know RSS? The resource indication? It's a summarization. It's a way that you could summarize the content of a page or of a site. And it has channels and items in the channel. And it's a mix. So it is to some degree structured, has some structuring elements of metadata and structure, but some of the content is also just text with some markup in between. So it's not clear-cut, data-centric, or narrative. But what we'll be doing here, what I'm going to be focusing on XML schema and DTD, would be typically data-centric. That's where we have more of a structure, and that's typically where we like to write programs that would parse data. And when we parse data, we need to deal with what if the document does not contain something that we expect it to contain, being an attribute, being an element, or being a part of the document. Because then in the code, as you're going to see later on, in the code, we need to write the tests to deal with documents that don't contain what they should contain. Because that's what validation is about. It's a mechanism for specifying and detecting errors in the document, structural errors. And as I said, that would typically be that you have the wrong order of elements, you are missing an element, you have elements that haven't been specified, you have too many of a certain element, or you have missing attributes, or you have attributes that haven't been specified. So, to validate, you first need to define a schema. This is like in a database. We define the schema before we can enter data into the schema, into the database. And here we write up a schema using DTD or XML schema, or there are some other technologies as well that you can use, but these are the two standard ones. And we use a validating parser. What is a validating parser? Well, that's a parser that would read the document and read the schema and compare the document to the schema to see if the document is according to the format specified in the schema. For us as programmers, validation is really a nice tool. Because why would we use the validation? Well, by using a validator, we don't have to write all these tests. Because if you remember from our DOM exercise, we can go and set up an XPath query. It will get an element, and we go and access the element. Now, if we don't know if the element is there, we need to test. So for all elements, for all attributes, before we access them, we need to test them. I'm writing all this test code, or all these tests in our code, saying whenever we want to get a value, we first have to test, is it really there? Then we're going to have a lot of tests in our code. So rather than doing that, we say, okay, we expect the document to have this format. This format specifies it. The document will have these children. The document will have these attributes. These are the possible values of the attributes. These are the possible number of children of anything. Then we can just, before we start accessing the document, we can just send it to the validator, say, is it okay? And if it is, we don't have to test anything, because then we can assume that the document passed validation, so the document will have all the children that we expect, the document will have all the attributes that we expect, it is according to the format. So we can assume that the document has the format that we expect it to have. And then potentially there are fewer bugs in the application, because when we test, we write test cases where we typically assume that the user is setting up the document the way we intend them to. But be sure, there is a user who is put together a document all by himself and feeding it to the system, and it breaks because it doesn't have the structure the way you were thinking of it. By specifying the schema, then we could just leave it to the validator, to the parser, to check that it's according to the schema. And if it passes validation, you can assume that this is all fine. You could just go ahead. And another important feature is that the schema, it represents or it describes the value structure. So it is a kind of a documentation. It documents what we expect such a document to contain. So we can publish the schema and say, this is what we expect. It's here. It tells you what you need to include. It tells you what is optional. It tells you what are the valid domains, if you use a database name or database term, or the possible attribute values. We talked about the well-formed already. You remember, we had to have proper nesting, element and tag names were case-sensitive. Attributes had to be quoted, and they could appear only once. So there are a number of rules, and also what are legal names for elements and attributes. All documents must be well-formed. If we have a parser or any XML tool, if the document isn't well-formed, it should stop. Say, this is invalid, or this is not well-formed. This is not a legal XML document, as an XML document. But then, a valid document, the term valid means that it has a well-known structure. It's according to a DTD or a schema. So we, in the validation or in the schema, when we validate, we have a document that defines what are the elements, what are the attributes, what is the text content that will be allowed in the various parts of the document. And we specify to quite some detail, as you'll see, what is the valid structure. And some of these, we have SVG, XHTML, RSS, MIL, SOAP, RDF. For all of these, you're going to find schemas that specify what is the proper structure of these documents. And by looking at the schema, you can write a program that deals with these data. And whenever there are optional elements or optional attributes, you in the program, of course, will have to test if it's set before you access it. But for everything that's mandatory, you could just go ahead and assume that it's there. So if an attribute is mandatory, then you just access it directly. You don't have to test if you run it through the validator first. So, how can you validate? Well, if you write application code, we can validate using a validating parser. I'll show you the PHP one. You may also use an editor that has built-in validation. So that's fine if you have there are some very advanced XML editors. And as you write the text, it will and you can load the schema on the side, it will tell you this is not according to schema. You're expecting a date here, you have just entered some characters that are not date characters, or this is not a legal valid child at this part in the document. But there are also some services, XML validator services. So for instance, the xmlvalidation.com is a place where you have a service, and they can be quite convenient for when you develop your schema, or you just want to test if the schema would work for a certain document that you have in mind. Now, I'm not sure what these XML validation guys have been doing, because previous years this has been a very fast service. Now it's slow. I'm assuming that they have had quite a number of services using the service, rather implement validation itself, and just sent it to XML validation. So I think they've added a delay just to make sure that no one is abusing their service. That's what I think. But it's a bit slow, unfortunately. It's still a good tool, I think, because otherwise you have to write up a bit of code to run validation. I'll show you a little bit later how this is going to be like. So these are general purpose validators, but there are also some special purpose validators. So if you have HTML content, you can go to, or any web content, you can go to the validators, w3c.org, and they will have validators that will check your HTML or SVG or SMILE, which are the special types of documents. And you have for RSS feeds, you have the, again, validated W3C. They have validators for not just for the XML content, but specifically for these documents. In PHP, which is what we do, then we can call the validate function when you have a DTD. So we just call validate. We create a document. We load the nutrition XML. And we check if it's valid. I put together, so if you go to the to Blackboard, I uploaded some example files for the week, and I put up a document that looks like this. Let's see if you can make it a bit larger. Is that readable? Let's see, I'll make the window a bit larger. So what am I doing here? Well, I have a document, the nutrition document we know, and in here there is a chicken pot pie element, food element. So I search for food where the name is chicken pot pie, and I get the serving, and item 0 to list what is the serving content and the units attribute, and then I go to the food chicken pot pie vitamins A and get the text to see how much vitamin there is and print it out. The validation I haven't implemented yet, just for this. And if we look at the let's see the what I did with the XML document here is, for now let's assume that this document didn't contain the units attribute here, so I commented out the real one. I put up serving without the units, so we don't know what the unit is, and here I commented out the vitamins, so it doesn't have any vitamins element. Now obviously this should cause my code to break, because I tried to access that directly. So what's happening? It's trying to, it's serving 198, and it's trying to get a property out of a non-object. And again, vitamin A is trying to get the property of a non-object. Sorry, these were the first one. The second one is just blank, because you couldn't find anything. It's just empty. So, what are my options? I could here... before accessing this, I could check the length of the this XPath query to see if it's proper length. And here I could again check that I actually get some content. But if I have to do that whenever I access the XML document, there are going to be lots of if tests. So this is why you like to validate. So we could go here, and I can activate the validation. Now it will call the validate. And in this package that I put up, I also included the DTD. We're going to come back to this. This is the DTD. It specifies that there should be serving should have, this is what this means, the serving element should have an attribute list that contains units, and units is required, meaning that I should expect a unit. We'll come back to the details, but just to give, oops, sorry. Just here, it says that element food, it's supposed to have a name child, a manufacturer's child, a serving child, and vitamins child. That's what they say. It's expecting to have that. So when I, let me see, did I save the, I guess I didn't. I need to save this with the validation. And if I now run, it says there is an error. Element food content is not following the DTD. We're expecting name, manufacturer, serving, rep, and we got one without vitamins. So here between protein and minerals, here between protein and minerals, there should be some vitamins that we didn't find. And also, serving is supposed to have attribute units. So now the validator fails. It says, nope, this is not valid. I don't want to process until the document is according to the specification. You follow me? So that's the use of this. And for a schema, we can call schema validate. And when we do schema validate, we're going to be passing another XML document, which is the schema document. Now, if we look at the schema document, I collapsed it a little bit, but at least we recognize this is XML. And it is an XML schema. It defines some elements. It defines some types. And if I go to, it was here. If I go to the document and I stop the DTD validation. Oops, sorry. And then rather do the schema validation. So, same thing. When I validate, I just load the nutrition XD, and I'm going to run the schema validate. I didn't save it. I should save first. Now, schema validate fails on the same things. It says element serving, the attribute units is required but missing. And element food does, let's see here. And element minerals, this is not expected. It is expecting vitamins when it found minerals. So again, the parser tells us what the problem is. So use validation to simplify your code writing. Then you can assume that the document has the proper format before you go on to process it using DOM. Now, let's start the hard part, trying to understand how these schemas look like, what we can specify and how they look like. And we started with the DTD, and then we continue with the schema after the break. So in the DTD, we can define elements and what is the content of elements, and we can define attributes. So this is what we'll do. And then we talk a little bit about the limitations of the DTD, which is the reason why the schema was developed in the first place. So what we need is what they call a document type definition file. If you remember from the DOM, there is a DOM document type node, type of node, and this represents the document type definition file. The name of the file should be the same as the name of the root element. So in a nutrition XML, there should be a nutrition.dtd. In a skilogs.xml, there should be a skilogs.dtd. And it defines the valid structure and content. What is the difference between structure and content? Well, structure means in what order, what is the tree looking like? In what order will it appear? When it comes to content, is where is text allowed? What text content do we have? And in the schema, we have limited possibilities to restrict the actual values of the content. But in the schema, we have more feature for that. We'll talk about this maybe today, maybe on Tuesday. So in the document, we use the doc type definition here, and this is the name of the document type, which again should be the same as the root element. This is a public document type. A public means that this is a standard that the W3C org has endorsed and published. So we don't have to give this URL. We can to say you can find it here, but what is important is this URI, the identity of the DTD, because then any program who is able to deal with SVG can read this and know that okay, this is an SVG type of document. The same as we did with namespace. If you remember, with namespace we had the URI, so that tools could recognize this is a known vocabulary, and here. This is the way to identify the DTD for SVG. For our case, we don't have the luxury of publishing public document formats, but we can still write up DTD. But in that case, it will be a system URI. And when we say system here, we can give the URL for where the file is. This now is going to be relative to the actual file. So where I stored XML file, it expects to find the DTD in the same file. But I could also use an HTTP address here, and then it would go on to the network, to the internet, to find the DTD. It's also possible to have internal DTDs, which means that at the very beginning of an XML document, you can do document type, and then rather than have a public or a system, you can specify in squares the actual DTD inside the document. Disadvantage is it's hard to publish it then because it's embedded in the document, but it's a good way, as you test it, for instance, it might be a good way so you don't have to open another file and everything, you can find it there. Inside the, I could as well, while we're at it here, just show you. So if we go to our XML document, let's see, that's the XML document, and we copy it, then we can go to XML validation service, and we can write it in here, and I can validate. Now it will go through, parse the file, and it says, okay, I found that you need the DTD, because there was a doc type, so you need the DTD. So we can go here to our DTD, because it's a system and they don't have the file on the server, that's the service, that's why they ask for it. So here I can do copy the file, and I can go here and glue it in. Or if I had it as a file, I could also go and choose the file, as you can see on the interface here. I could choose it. Now I can continue validation. And then, as I said, by some reason they put in some delay, I think, just to make it slow. So you see here, same thing. It says attribute units is required. And at line 104, the food should match name, manufacturer, server, and calories, and we are missing vitamins. So that's why it's failing here. So as we are developing schemas or DDDs, XML validation is a nice tool. You can glue up the document, an example of a document that's valid. We can put it up. We can write our DDD. And to test that the DDD is not accepting some example documents, we can upload some example documents and run it with the DDD and see that it fails, like we've been doing here. So use that XML validation service as you develop schemas. It's a nice way to test your schema. Because this is like with testing. You remember with testing? We talked about testing. You write tests to detect errors. But you're also likely to write errors in your test code, not just in the code that you test. So writing tests also means that you had to debug tests. And so running tests on many test cases would also help you to fix the test. So the tests are good. And same here. When you write a schema, you are also likely to write an error in your schema. So as you develop, try to test the schema on various documents to make sure that the schema is correct. And then when you have a correct schema, you know that the documents that you're going to be processing later on are going to be correct if they pass the test or the validation. So this is typically how we write this in the DDD. We specify elements. So this one says that the element total fat is supposed to contain parsable character data. What do we mean by parsable? Why is the P there? Well, it means that if you have an entity reference, like a Unicode reference, or like the less than reference, entity character reference, then it will be replaced with the proper value. So this is just character data. So total fat, saturated fat, cholesterol, sodium, carb, fiber. And if we go back to our document, let's see, I think I have the document here. Oh, it was good, wasn't it? Then we see that, if we go all the way to the top, then we see that name, manufacturer, serving, cholesterol, they all contain just text. There is text. Oh, okay, it has some attributes, but besides attributes, it has text as the content. So these are leaf nodes that have text underneath. Let me just... So it's pretty easy to write up definition of all elements. We just have to make sure, again, case sensitive. We had to write up the name in the right casing and say it contains PC data. There might be some that are empty. In that case, we just type in empty. It doesn't have any content. And an example of that is the calories. If you remember the calories, if you go back to look at the schema, if you look back at the calories is empty. It just has two attributes. You can have attribute even if you're empty, but it's it doesn't have any children, just attributes. That's why it's empty. And then you define the tree structure. And in the DDD, you define tree structure by listing the children. So here you say the element daily values, it has children, total fat, saturated fat, cholesterol, sodium, carb, fiber, protein, in that order. And one and only one. If you don't specify, if you just give the name like this, there will always be one and only one total fat, one and only one saturated fat, one and only one cholesterol. And food will have one name, one manufacturer, one serving, one calories, one total fat. Vitamins will have an A child and a C child. Element minerals will have a C, A, and an F, E. So we list with comma a sequence of elements. That is how we define the structure of the tree. But then sometimes, not in this example, but somewhere in the ski logs, for instance, we may have multiple skiers. We may have multiple clubs. We may have multiple log entries for a skier. So how do we do that? Well, what we do is that after the name of the child, we list. Question mark means optional. It's there or it's not. It can be mostly one, but it can be, or it may not be there. Plus means that it's there at least once, and it may be there more times. With the star, it says, we don't care. May be there, may not be there. May be there many times. So in this case, if you remember the nutrition document, it does have at least one food element, and it may optionally have many more. We could have replaced this with a star, which means that our document would only contain the daily values, not any food elements at all. But in this case, we require that there is at least one food element in the XML file. And then when we parse, we can assume that the document we open is fulfilling this one. And we can group children and say, let's say you have a temperature, you observe, have an observation where you have an average temperature and you have many mean and max temperatures. So let's say this is the average for a week, and for each day in the week you have one mean and one max. So this will allow us to have, the question mark means 0, 1. So we have the average temperature, we may or may not have a mean and max. But if you have mean, we also have max. If you have max, we also have mean. So this means the question mark means that it's there, either both or none of them are there. Average temperature is always there. Mean, max may be there, may not be there. But because we have the question marks, the parentheses before the question mark, it means the group is either there or not there. So if I put a question mark behind mean temp and max temp, it would mean that I could have mean temp, I could have max temp, I could have both, I could have none. Now with the parentheses, we group them and say that this group, mean max group, is either both of them are there or none of them are there. You follow that? So we can group with the parentheses if there are any nodes that need to go as pairs. So, what should the food element look like if vitamins and minerals were optional? So if we go back to our nutrition XML, the DTD. So we have vitamins here. So in the food element, we have vitamins. What can we do to make that one optional? If we go to XML validation, so this one failed. So let's go and change the schema to see if we can get it to work. Nutrition DTD. Any ideas what you want to do? What you need to do? These are your children. Star means zero or many. We may not want to have many groups of vitamins. We want to have zero or one. And then there's a question mark, I would say. Because otherwise we may have many vitamin groups. We may have A, vitamin A repeated. You don't want it to be repeated. Yeah, but these are children of vitamins. So vitamins is the parent. It has an A and a C. This is the one that's disappeared. This is the one that's optional. So if you make it into a question mark and then continue validation, then it says, okay, now it's fine. I can deal with no vitamins because it was optional. And still remain problems with attributes. If we did this way, then we had to remember in our code that vitamins may not be present. So whenever we deal with vitamins, we first had to check that the vitamins element is there. And if it's there, it's still the fact that if vitamins is there, it's still the fact that both A and C is there. Because if you go to the schema, well, I think it's better to look at the schema here, you find that vitamins still defines that both A and C. If you want to make them optional, we have to put question marks behind the A and behind the C, which means that, okay, A may not be there, but C is there. Or C is maybe there, but not A. So this is the way we can decide whether whether a child is there, and if it's there multiple times. We can't say one or more. It's either, so it's quite limited. You can say that it has to be one and then more. You can only specify. You can do the plus. You can do one. You can do zero, zero one, or zero many, one many. But you can't do 2 to 5, for instance. You can't say, okay, it should be at least, it should be max 2, or there might be at least 3 and no max. So it is 0, 1, 1 or many. These are the types similar to what we have been doing on, if you remember, on UML. On UML, you could do 0 star, 1 star, 0, 0, 0, 1. But with the new UML, you can also say 2 to 5. If you want to do the cardinality on the relationships. Now, if you have a polygon with x, y, and you say a polygon is at least 3 points, how would the DTD look like? We can spend a couple of minutes. We're going to run a little bit into the break, but spend a couple of minutes thinking about how would the DTD look like to make sure that a polygon has at least 3 points, may have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and limited number of points, but at least 3. How would we specify that? Think about it as I put it into XML validation, and we can see if we can get it there. Any ideas? At least we need to do element. Let's see, it was polygon, wasn't it? Polygon. And we need to specify the children. And we need element X, and it is PC data, and Y is also character data. Now, what should the children of polygon be to make sure that we have at least 3, but potentially more? I mean, the easy thing would be to have 3. Okay, we have X, Y, X, Y, X, Y. If I haven't done anything wrong, there should be no errors. This one is fine. Now, if I make this XML document and I make a 4th point, now, it obviously doesn't make sense, the polygon itself, because I just copied some same as other point, but that's beyond the point. Now, I try to validate, and it says, oh, this is not according to 3 points, because this is 4 points. How do we make it into 4 points? make it so that it will accept 4 points as well. Any suggestions? There is time, as this one is working, there is time. What should we do here? The final one, or plus. If you do star, it means that it will accept zero. Yeah, you have at least 3 points. So if you say, it needs at least 3 points. So this is the first point, this is the second point, this is the third point, and potentially more. Continue validation. No errors found. Now if I go to that document and say, will it accept, so this is what I will want to do, is will it accept any documents if I don't have a, so I remove the Y from the final one, or from anyone, and would that be okay? And then XML validation says, nope, that was not okay. We are happy with that because it shouldn't accept it. And now let's take away the third point in the documents too, and see if it will accept if you just have two. So this is how we would test the boundary cases. See, will it accept not valid point, and will it accept too few points? So, no, sorry, I was going to the XML document. Yeah, it's the delay is, it used to be better, as I said. So if you take the three final values out, so now we have a line, not a polygon, a line. And if you try to validate, it will again say that this is not valid. Okay, so now we have been able to put together a hierarchy which has 3 points, 4 points, 5 points, whatever, many points. But just, as you said, group and decide that this one can be repeated. Since we want at least three, we would use the plus, not the star. But other than that, it's this is the idea. Okay, I think that is where we take the break, and we start on attributes after the break. So we've been through the element contents, saying that elements may contain a sequence of elements, or it may contain text or some data. But what about attributes? Well, if you remember, attributes are a bit simpler. They just contain some text, cannot contain other elements or cannot contain attributes. They just contain some data. And typically in DDD, you will just say these are character data, just sequence of data. But there are, in DDD, you have some additional options to restrict what the actual value could be. So you could say that it can be an ID, and this is similar to in a database. So if you say that it's an ID, it's a primary key for that element inside this document. So only one element will have that ID. If you remember from the DOM, we had on elements and documents, we had get element by ID. So we can find the element. If you know the ID, we can find the element quickly by just looking for it. And in XPath, you will then have a similar. You can search for the ID field. Remember that IDs have to be valid XML names, which means that they can start with only a character or an underscore. And then they can contain characters, numbers, underscore, and dashes, and dots. That's pretty much what you could do. No colon, no semicolon, no spaces. So IDs are kind of restricted in terms of what type of values you will accept, but that's okay. As long as you have follow those rules, you can define them to be an ID, and then they will be unique in the document, so that the validator will complain if you have multiple documents with the same ID, or sorry, elements with the same ID. And you can have the ID ref. An ID ref is similar to the to a foreign key. So ID ref means that someplace in document you say this is an ID ref, and it should refer to an ID somewhere in the document. So if you remember, or if you go to the skier logs. Document, ski logs document, we have clubs, ID, Asker, Lillehammer, Skiklubben, Vind, IL, these are the IDs, and here we have users, and if we go, and users have usernames, and if we go to the later part of the document for the season, we find here a club ID. And that club ID should obviously match a club. Because you would like, when you refer to a club, you would like to know what club it is. You just have the ID. So that's why this one, you would like this to be an ID ref referring to this one. And similarly, the usernames here should match the username of some skier up here. Because otherwise, you refer to a skier, you don't know who it is. You just have the ID of the skier, and now you would like this to be fully contained, so all the clubs, all the skiers that are referred to should have an element in here, which is similar to the primary key, foreign key discussion that we have had in the database. And it's possible to have enumeration, which means that we can list what values will be acceptable as an enumerated list. You know an enumeration from programming? Yeah. It's the same thing here. Besides this, you can also specify the occurrence. You remember for elements, we had the zero, we had question mark, plus, star. It's not the same here, because if you remember an attribute in XML, it can only appear once for the same elements. We don't have any of the multiple ones. We don't have the plus and the star, we only have the question mark or without. And here it's called required if the attribute is mandatory, and you say implied if an element is or an attribute is optional. So if you go to the maybe we'll use the if you go to the DTD, we can see here that attribute list, sorry, saturated fat has an attribute list called units. So when I list the element, I say this is the name of the element and this is the content. In the at list, this is the name of the attribute and this is the element, or this, and here comes a list of attributes for the element, and there's only one. Units, it's a character data and it's implied, meaning that it may or may not be there. So we don't know if we get any fat units. And why is this? Why is this not mandatory? Well, one of the problems with DTD is that you can't specify the structure of an element based on where it appears in the tree. Why is this important? Well, if we look at the document here, we see that inside daily values, we specify the total fat and the units. Now here, when I use total fat, I don't have to refer to the units because the units is specified up here. In DTD, I can't say that when total fat appears in daily value, it has to have units, but when it comes in food, it should not have. In a DTD, I can't do that. I can only say that the element total fat may have a units attribute. We're going to come back to schema and see that this is one of the differences. So in schema, we can say that here, when it appears here, it must have the attribute, and when it appears here, it shall not have. We can specify that in a schema, XML schema, but not in the DTD. In DTD, we have to make it optional because in some cases there will be the attribute, in some cases it will not be. So that's why we said implied. You follow me on that? So here, this implied is because the saturated fat appears two places. In one case, it's there, and the other case is not there. Daily values, it's there. In the food element, it's not there. But when we come to calories, I have no children, but it has two attributes, and both of them are required because calories are only defined on food, and we want them to be there every time. So that's why these are required. And calories, total fat, fat are all attributes. Total fat, fat are all both attributes of calories. So, yeah, we've been through. This is protein, has units, it's optional. Calories, here they are required. They are C data. And a list of values, you could specify it this way, an enumeration list. By after month, you specify the values. And here you use the vertical bar to separate. So it means it may be January or February or March or April or May or June. So these are the only valid values for the attribute. If you try to put up any other value, it would fail. We list the exact values that are. And here, with required, it will have to be one of those. The attribute has to be there, and it will have to be one of those. If it said implied, then we may not have a month, but if it has, it will still have to be one of these values, listed exact values. But note that you can't do this for elements. You can't specify that the element should have a text value that could be one of these. In schema, we can, when we come to schema. But in the DTD, you can only say that it contains text data, PC data. That's the only thing for an element. It's either mixed, or it's a list of children, or it is any type of text. And you can say that it has to be a date, or it has to be a month, or it has to be something else. We'll talk about that when we come to the schema. And here, it's possible to say that, okay, we have a car, and the car have a license plate number, which is an ID, and then we have a parking spot, and if the parking spot is reserved for a car, then this ID could be a reference to the car based on the ID or the license plate. So this is the way we can create relationships or foreign keys. So this would then be the primary key, and this would be the foreign key equivalent. You follow me on that? There's more to DTD. We have the potential of having a choice, meaning that you don't have to have sequence of children. You can have either that child or that child. The same as we had the month was either January or February or March. We can do the same with children. We can have mixed content, which means that it can be text or elements mixed up. We can have any content, which means that it can be anything, meaning even undefined elements or unspecified in that position. So this might be a good way, if you like to develop a validator, it could be a good way by setting any on the content first, and then it passes validation, and then you replace the any with the more specific definition. So this might be a way. Or if you like it to be open to future changes, you could put in any as well. And there are some other. You have ID refs and name tokens, entities. So these are, in that case, you could have a list of IDs or a list of names. I don't find them very, very useful, but there are possibilities. And you could also, for an attribute, you could say that it is fixed, meaning that if it appears, it will have to have this fixed value. If it doesn't appear, then it will get the fixed value anyway. So you can define it. And you could define a literal value, which means that a default value, which means that if you don't specify, this is the value. If you specify, it's going to override the default. But that's these are some sugar on top of what we already talked about. And then we have the possibilities to declare entities and have subsets, meaning that a DTD may contain other DTDs, and you will break them into smaller parts and integrate it all up. But that's not so important. As long as you are able to read element definitions, attribute list definitions, sequences, and the content, and know that, and be able to understand what type of XML document will satisfy the DTD, then you're fine. Because what we're going to be spending more time on is on the schema. Why is that? Because there are some limitations to DTDs that we would like to improve on. We would like to have more expressiveness. DTDs, for instance, cannot constrain the character data. So you can't say that this should be a date, or this should be a positive integer, or this should be a Boolean value. You can't specify more than these are characters. Like, what are valid phone numbers look like? How would email addresses look like? Integers. And you have limited attribute types. I mean, you have ID ref, name tokens, but they don't have the same. You can't use dates, you can't use years, you can't use positive numbers. And as we said about the children, you can say it has 0, 1, or many. You can't specify that there should be 2 to 5, or no more than 3, or no less than 4. You have no way of specifying this. So in the case of the polygon, you can't say that it should have 3 or more. You can't specify that. You can only say specify the three of them and say that the last one can be repeated. There's no namespace support, so once you get into namespace, it gets quite not tricky, but inconvenient. The ID ref mechanism is a bit restricted. For one, you can't specify that the ID needs to be of a certain type. So in the car and license plate, or let's go to the skier. So let's say that a skier has the same username as a club has an ID. Then the problem is that you can't specify that the club ID and the username would clash. And when you refer on the ID, and you can't say that it has to be a club with that ID, or it has to be a user. In the schema, you can say that the foreign key is pointing not just to a value, but also a value in a certain type of element. And they can't be numbers. So you can't have a foreign key on a number, because it has to be a valid XML name, which means that it has to start with underscore or a character. DTDs aren't written in XML, and there are other reasons why we would like to go to the schema. So we're going to start on the schema basics. And hopefully get a little bit into the simple and complex content, and then we continue this on Tuesday and have also a little bit more advanced schema functionality on Tuesday. We need to define some terms here. They are important in understanding these things, but they're easily confused with each other. So for instance, we have contents, simple contents. What is the contents? The contents of a node is whatever is in the tree underneath. So so if you remember, if we have A, and then we may have a text child, we may have a B child, we may have a C child, we may have a text child. What is the content of A? The content of A is the text node, the B, the C, the text node. What is the content of the text? It is the text. It's a text node, it contains character strings. So the content of a node of a node can be text, can be elements, or a mix of the two. In this case it's a mix of the two. So when we talk about content, simple content is the same as in when you program in C++, you have the data types, ints and floats and char, and these are the basic data types. And they are simple types. They can contain strings and dates and numbers, whatever. But then the complex content. Complex content will be like classes. They will have other elements, possibly mixed with text in this case. So think of these as the basic data types in a programming language, and the complex content is like an object. An object has attributes and attribute values. An attribute is a simple type. It's a pointer to something, or it's an int, or it's a float, or it's a boolean. So it's a simple content. And why is this so hard to understand? I mean, isn't this obvious? Well, the problem is that we also talk about types. And in XML schema, the definition of a type is important. A type is what type of content you may find in an element or in an attribute. So what are the types? Well, the document has a type. The document type is the root element, what the root element is and what it may contain. That is the document's type. The element's type would be whatever the element may contain. The attribute's type would be whatever the attribute contains. And a text node would be the type of the node. In the schema here, well, the text may be a date, may be an int, maybe there are different text types. And so think of this as classes. So when you have a class that has pointers to other classes, it contains member variables that are other classes or points to other classes. When you have an object, the type of the class will be the type of the object, and that would include the types of the member variables. So think of this as the same way. So the document type is the class that contains the document, which would be a class saying a person, and the person has, for instance, an affiliation with clubs, so it has a reference to the club it's a member of, and then that type person will include the member variable with club, which is of class club. Now comes the tricky part. We have simple content and complex content. Simple content being just text, complex content being elements. But we also have simple types. And a simple type is a type that only contains simple content. So what is a simple type? Well, an int is a simple type, or dates is a simple type. What is complex types then? Well, complex type, and here comes the problem, complex type may have complex content. So if an element contains elements, it has complex content and is of a complex type. So the difference between a complex type and complex content comes where an element contains simple content, an element only contains texts, but it has an attribute. Because once you have an attribute, by definition you are complex. Dates don't have attributes. Names don't have attributes. But if you have a distance, and a distance has the actual distance, and it has the which is 200, and the distance has an attribute called meter, then distance is complex. You have to represent this using a class in your program. If you write a program that distances should have a value and the unit, 200 meters, then the only way to do that in C++ is to create a struct or a class, because it's complex. Even though the value is just 200, it's complex because it has the attribute that tells us the unit. You agree with me? You understand? So simple content and simple type are easy because they just contain values. Now, complex content means that there are attributes in the specified as the children of an element. But simple content, meaning just a value, but where the element has an attribute, is of a complex type. So when we specify complex types, we may have simple content or complex content. When we specify simple type, there will always be simple content, because it cannot contain. A simple type is just an int or a float or a date. A complex may be a value plus attributes, or may have multiple elements as children. Was that clear? So that's why it's important to distinguish between content and type. Think of a type, as I said, as a class definition. So when we define an element, it's like we define a class. So in the skier logs, we have club, skier. The club, think of it as a class. What is the content? Well, it has a first name variable, name variable, first name, value is a string. It has a last name. Name is last name, value is a string. Then it has year of birth, and the name of the attribute is year of birth, and the value is a year, a valid year in our Gregorian calendar. Okay, so this is the nice tree defined in XML schema that you could choose. So whenever we have an attribute, or we have an element with simple content, we can specify what is the type. So any simple type. So we have strings down here, and you can see ID and ID refs are special types of strings. These are strings, but they cannot start with numbers, for instance. So there are some special rules. And we have date and time. We have time. We have date. And here, when it comes to year, month, day, month, why is there a G in front of the attribute name? I mean, here we have the date, but there, when we want to go to the year, is a G year. Why is that? Have any ideas? Because there are different calendars. A date is a specification of a date, and it can be interpreted as a number that you can convert to a calendar. Now, if you want to know the year, you need to know the year in what calendar. And the G means the Gregorian calendar, the one we are using. So that's why are the G's here. So this is the year in the Gregorian calendar, this is the day in the Gregorian calendar, this is the month in the Gregorian calendar. So that's why you have the G's there. And then, of course, you have for numbers, let's see where the numbers, yeah. You have Boolean, you have numbers, you have decimal, and you have integer as a special case of decimal. So you don't have floats, you have decimals. Oh, yeah, sorry, you have float and double error, but in the decimal, you have the integer as one of the decimal, and then you have non-positive and you have the negative. And you have the non-negative and you have the positive. So why is non-positive and non-negative? What's the difference between non-positive and negative? There is one value, the zero. So non-positive means that it's zero or negative. Negative means it's negative. Non-negative means it's zero or positive. So it can include zero. That's basically the difference between the two. And you have the instant shorts and everything. So these are, remember that in the DTD, we can say it's character data, or it might be a valid ID ref, or an enumeration. But you can't specify that it has to be a valid date or a valid year according to the Gregorian calendar, or a valid Boolean value. So it has much richer vocabulary when it comes to defining what are legal values of attributes, and even elements with simple content. So if we have a distance, if we have number of calories, we can say it's supposed to be a non-negative, because we can have zero calories. That's why non-negative is quite useful, because it includes the zero, and that's quite useful. Attribute values. What type may attribute value? Will it always be simple type, or could it be complex type? Attribute value. When we specify attribute values, could we define that to be a complex type? Then you have to think about the well-formed rules in XML. So what is a complex type? Well, a complex type is either something that has children. Can we have elements defined inside an attribute value? No. So it can't be that. So the other choice is that it's simple value, but it has attributes. Can an attribute have an attribute? No. So attributes will always have to be simple type. Elements can be simple or complex, defined depending on whether they have attributes, depending on whether they have children. If they have no attributes, no children, child elements, then they can be a simple type. If they have attributes, or they have elements as children, then they are by definition complex. And this becomes important because in the schema, when we define types, we have to define whether they're simple or complex. And if we mess this up, then the validator is going to complain about the schema not being valid. How do we relate documents with schemas? You remember that in the DTD case, we did define a doc type. In an XML document, we're going to use a schema instance namespace. Say that this document is an instance of a schema. In the same way as a database, you have a schema, and the actual database is an instance of the schema, or an object is an instance of a class. The same notation here. So this document is an instance of a schema or a class. So, and we have two ways of linking it. One is to use the attribute no namespace location, which is specified here in the schema instance. And no namespace schema location means that the attributes are defined in the global namespace. You remember namespace is where we can combine the different vocabularies, different XML structures. We haven't used them much, so what we would be using here would typically be no namespace, meaning that we don't specify the namespace for any of the attributes. They are in the global space. If we are using namespaces and we would like to specify the correct structure, then we need to use schema location. And then we need to define the namespace of the that is defined by that schema. This is another level of complexity, and I think for those of you who are going to be going into XML, you will need to handle namespace, and there is more syntax and something to go into, but I think you should be able to take that step, even though we haven't practiced it here. And what are the top level nodes in an XML schema? Well, the first thing is that we define what are the possible valid routes or valid route element of the of such a document. In the DTD, it would have to be the name of the DTD was the name of the root element. Now here, we have alternative root elements, which means that the same schema may define a whole family of documents. I don't like that. I like that the schema is for one specific type. And if you want to have other schemas for parts of the document, I would prefer rather making separate schemas and combine them. So, but in all the documents or schemas I make, and I will show you, there will always be just one element defined, and that is the root element. Everything else will be linked to the root element. But it is possible to list alternative root elements in the schema, and a document, as long as it has the root element belonging to any of the alternative elements, it's fine. And then you define types. And remember, what is a type here? A type could be the simple type, which is just then, but it's a float or date or int. But it could also be a complex type, which, we, as I said, would be the same as a class definition, which would define a sequence of children. In the same that in, when we define an element in the DDD, we would list the sequence of children. The same here. In the complex type, we define what are the possible children and in what order will they appear. So, I can show you here as well. So if you go here to the schema. So this is the whole schema for the nutrition. This is the that's I put in the package that you can download. So you see here the schema. The first child is the element. So this is the one and only possible root element in this, because there is only, if you see here, the children of the schema is element, complex type, complex type, complex type, simple type. So the only root element in my schema here would have to be a nutrition element. That's the only. If I had another element here, after this element, at least another element, then that would also be a valid root element in my schema. As I said, I don't like that. I think that a schema should specify one specific tree structure, and that specific tree structure should have one common root in my mind. But you're free to do it differently. And what is the nutrition? Is a complex type. I collapsed the actual content here, and we could specify keys, like the food item name, it should be unique. And there is a complex type. I specify the type here, which is a sequence of something, and a food type. These are all complex types that typically define children. And here is a simple type, which is just a weight metric unit type, and we'll look at that a little bit later. But this is a structure. So we list what is the possible root element, or elements if you want more, and then what are the types that we refer to, that we use. We're going to go dive into the details a bit later. But again, here in the slide format, so we have the element. This is the one and only root element, possible root element. And we haven't specified what it looks like, just that it has an element. And then we define, and when we define a complex type, what we do define is a type of a class. So this is a definition of a class. So the daily value class, it specifies a class structure or an XML node structure for dealing with daily values. And then a simple type would be to say, okay, now I'm not happy with just ints or floats. I would like to have an enumerated list. And in an enumeration, I could specify my enumeration here. So that would be a new type of simple values. It's just a string, but the string values that are accepted are just the ones listed in this enumeration, for instance. Is it unclear, or you're kind of okay? Well, we're going to go much into the details of the complex and simple type eventually. But at least you can see from the top in the document, you have element, which is the root element, and what type it is. And then you have the various types that you may use. in the document. And these come then in addition to whatever types that XML schema gives you already. So, simple thing. How do we define simple strings? Remember that in the element, we would say hash PC data, say that they contain text. In this case, we could be more specific. We can say that this is a general string. So element name, remember that food has have names, and name is just a string. Then we say this is simple content, simple type, simple content. The simple type is the string. XS is the prefix for the XML schema. So in my schema, I define the XML, if you go up to the previous page, you see here, I define the XS prefix for the XML namespace for the XML schema. And so here, this is an XS element, meaning that this is a specification of an element. And this is the value, XS string, using the schema string, that we the big tree that we saw before of all the types. And these are floats. So in the DTD, I couldn't do that. In the DTD, I could say that these will have to be character data. And then in my code, I might have to check, is the data actually a number? Because if the user types in a string here, then we need to test. Because we're going to use it as a number, and then we should test if it is a number. And if it's not, we should fail in a nice way, not just crash. Or as PHP would do, try to convert it into number, and the user get wrong results because the number that the code is or the program is using is not the number the user had in mind. But here we can say it's a float, and if it's not a float, then the validator will complain when we try to validate this. Now, this is a bit different from the schema or the DTD when we handle the number of children. But other than that, we basically do the same thing. We save an element. It has a type. In this case, I have inline the type, meaning I specify the complex type here. I don't say type equals to and then refer to type. In this case, I can inline the type definition. It's a complex type, which means that this is a class definition if it was a program. And the class definition is that, okay, it is a sequence of elements. And the sequence is that first there is a daily values, and then there is a food. When it doesn't say, it's like in the DTD, there will have to be one, but only one. One and only one element when they're listed in a sequence. Unless mean occurs or max occurs is there. We'll talk about them later. This one, when it says max occurs, it means that we can have more than one. But we'll talk about them later. So in a schema, you have an element. It's of a complex type. It's a sequence of an element of a complex type of a sequence of an element of a complex type of a sequence of an element of a complex type of a sequence of an element of a complex type. So you have this huge, long tree there where you specify the tree structure. Question? So if the complex type complex type can take a sequence or a choice, or it can be an extension of a basic type, or you can have some simple content with some extensions. But an element here, you specify the type, you specify it to be a complex type, and in the complex type you specify these elements in a sequence as children of that one. But so either you put this one up here, and then they'll be top level nodes. If they weren't children of a sequence, of a complex type, of an element, then they could appear anywhere or at the top. But here we say that inside nutrition, there are sequences of where there can be first, there has to be first one daily value, and then there has to be at least one food element, but potentially more. That's what we specify here. So remember that we need to specify the type of everything. And the type here would be a specification of what are the children or what are the attributes that are defined for that can be defined on a node. And to define the children, you would typically define a sequence. And since we have a sequence here, the type of the element has to be complex, because the only simple type we have is a simple type that has simple content. And this one doesn't have simple content. It has a sequence. The sequence is a sequence of nodes, so it's complex. So when we specify, so remember the tree structure. So you have schema logs. If you go for that one, I don't know if you started to look into it, but you have schema logs, and then you have season, skiers, skier, log, entry. So in your DTD, in your schema, you will have the element for the ski logs. It has complex type, sequence, element. Among them, season. It has a complex type, sequence, elements. One of them, or one and only one, being the skiers. It has is a complex type, which is a sequence of skier. Just one, but it's still a sequence of the one. And the log is a complex type of a sequence of logs, which is a complex type of a sequence of an entry. An entry is a simple type. An entry does also has it has a distance and a date, and which are the simple. So it's going to be quite deep. So because of that, it's not a good idea to inline it this way. So saying that if this was a complex type, then you keep adding the complex type, it's very hard to read. So it's better than to define complex types and give them a name and refer to the name. So this is the inlined on in place. So you have the element, the type, the sequence, element type, sequence, element type, sequence, going in. But the other way of doing this is to define a complex type. And the complex type is a sequence of A and C. So vitamin here, rather than inline it, we can say that... we didn't have that example. So rather than inline it this way, I could say that the type is this element type, this vitamins type. So if you go to my XML example, so if we go for the food type, then we find that the food type has serving, let me see. Oh, it was inlined here, sorry. But at least if you see the up here, rather than specifying the, let's see, where is my mouse there? Rather than specifying the daily value type, so if you go here nutrition has a complex type, which is a sequence of daily values and food. What is daily values? Daily values is of type daily value type, which is the name of the structure I have here. So if I open that structure, I see that the daily value type is the sequence of total fat, saturated fat, cholesterol, sodium, carb, fiber, protein. So I can inline the specification this way, or I could define types. And up here, when I say what the daily value is, I say it's a daily value type. When I say here what the food type is, it's a food type. And here I can specify the food type, being a sequence of elements of a certain type. So I prefer breaking it up in names. This would be the same as in an object-oriented program. You would define a class for food. So this would be your food class. This would be your daily value class. And this would be the nutrition class, which has an object of the daily value, and it has multiple objects of food, or the food class. So break it into a reasonable size unit. You don't have to, because you can inline everything. So in place, or you define the element and you have a type reference. We say type equals to, and then the name, and then you define the types here in the name, as you will see in the examples. So here we say type equals daily value type, and then we implement it as a complex type, which is a child directly of the schema. Because in the schema I have the root element and I have all the types that I'm going to be using. And this is a complex type which defines a class structure, a node structure. I think this is, before we break, we just talk about the cardinality that I already mentioned. This is the difference between the DTD and the schema. In the DTD, we would say how many times a child may appear inside the parent. You remember we had star and everything. Now here, we say how many times this child may appear within his parent at this place. And that's very convenient if you want to use the same, let's say, the skiers or skier, use them in different places in the document, and in one place they can be multiple, in another place they can be only one. Then it's convenient to do it this way. And what we have is min occurs and max occurs. If you don't say anything, we assume that an element is going to be one and only one. And this is the same as a DTD. If you specify an element, it's going to appear once and only once in a valid document. But we can also put up under numbers, zero, which is the same as we had in the DTD. And we can say unbounded, which is the same as star or plus. So if you want to do, do I have an exercise for that? I don't know. So here we can say max occurs is unbounded, mean occurs is zero, meaning that it's optional. In this case, the parent, we may not know its parent, we may know one, we may know two, but no one has more than two parents. So this is a way to use the mean occurs and max occurs to define how many times a node can appear at this part in the tree. Okay, then on Tuesday, we continue on this part, and we'll look a little bit more into how to extend types and how to define keys and references.